Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Rishabad Purnavam Sukhari Praja Kacharja Ashtotara Satishri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prems Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktivinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Sham Kuna Radha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Gangamayi Ki Jai Jamanamayi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Brinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Thank you all very much for coming this evening for tonight's program. And we invite you, first of all, to check your cell phone. It should all be clean. And do we have a designated, where did Tukulam go? Do we have a designated happy place for babies and other such people?
Because I have so many children myself, everybody's used to me having a pretty high pain threshold for children.
Yeah, since I don't have any, my threshold is pretty low. Those who want to risk the lives of their children. You can be warned. And from what I understand, we're in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to this.
Maybe you can find me out.
425. And we can read the Sanskrit text. Yes, we can. Daivam.
Daivam.
Eva pare.
Eva pare.
Yajyam.
Yajyam.
Yogina.
Yogina.
Paryupasate,
Paryupasate,
Brahmagna,
Brahmagna,
Apare,
Apare,
Yagyam,
Yagyam,
Yagyenaivo Pajuvati,
Yagyenaivo Pajuvati.
We're on page 214. Daivameva pare jagyam.
Daivameva pare jagyam.
Yogina paryupasate.
Yogina paryupasate.
Brahmagna vapare jagyam.
Brahmagna vapare jagyam.
Yajnaivo pajuvati.
Yajnaivo pajuvati.
Daivameva pare jagyam.
Daivameva pare jagyam.
Yogina paryupasate.
Yogina paryupasate.
Brahmagna vapare jagyam.
Brahmagna vapare jagyam.
Yajnaivo pajuvati.
Yajnaivo pajuvati.
Someone else?
Daivame vapare jagyam.
Daivame vapare jagyam.
Yogina paryupasate.
It's going to go to finally go backwards to 25.
Yagye naivo pajuvati.
Deva meva pare yagyam.
Evameva pade yagyam.
Yogina
paryupasate.
Yamagna
vapade yagyam.
Yajena evo pajuvati.
Daivameva
pade yagyam.
Yogina paryupasate.
Brahmagna
vapade yagyam.
Yajena evo pajuvati.
Daivameva pare yagyam.
Yogina
paryupasate.
Brahmagna
vapare yagyam.
Yagena
evo pajuvati.
Daivam.
In worshipping the demigods.
Eva,
like this,
Apare,
some others,
Yagyam,
sacrifices,
Yoginaha,
mystics,
Aryupasate,
worship perfectly,
Brahma,
of the Absolute Truth,
Agno,
in the fire.
Apare,
others,
Yagyam,
sacrifice,
Yagyena,
by sacrifice,
Eva,
thus,
Upadruvati,
offer.
Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahma.
And environmental questions. People more comfortable with the doors open, will that make life more comfortable here?
I feel fine, Mark, if you'd like the doors open or if you want to take a vote, whatever you want to do.
I think we can open a door or two. We live near the beach, we get the fresh ocean air. Seems good.
Purport. As described above, a person engaged in discharging duties in Krishna consciousness is also called a perfect yogi or a first-class mystic. But there are others also who perform similar sacrifices in the worship of demigods, and still others who sacrifice to the Supreme Brahma or the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord. So there are different kinds of sacrifices in terms of different categories. Such different categories of sacrifice by different types of performers only superficially demark varieties of sacrifice. Actually, sacrifice means to satisfy the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, who is also known as Yajna.
Om Jnana Timidam Tasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shrayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Shapadantikam Andeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shaprasatam Sahagana Raganatam Pitamstam Sarivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Pitamstra E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Ho Patarupyascha Kripa Sindho Yevacha Patitana Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaurabhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the topic that we're studying is sacrifice, also known as jagya. The Sanskrit word is jagya. Everyone is sacrificing in some way. We sacrifice our time, our energy, our money, our intelligence, our skill, for some purpose. Maybe it's for our family, maybe it's for our country, maybe it's for science, maybe it's for some political purpose, a freedom movement or an ecological movement. Maybe it's for my career. I sacrifice my weekends so that I can study in advance of my toward my degree, toward my advancement of my career opportunities. And practically everyone sacrifices for something. So in the Vedic culture, sacrifice is ultimately meant for God, for the Supreme. I'm sacrificing for lesser things, but those lesser things for which I'm sacrificing are temporary. They're not the ultimate goal of life. Although people make them the ultimate goal of life, substituting those lesser things for the higher thing. Just like people give their life for their country. Who was it? Nathan Hale. I regret that I have but one life to give for my country. And before he was hanged by the British. So he made what they call the supreme sacrifice. He sacrificed his life. But he sacrificed it for a country. There are so many other countries. He sacrificed it for one. Other people sacrificed it for the opposite side. And whatever country he sacrificed it for will be gone after some time. It's not. And he's gone. And he was wrong also. I regret that I have but one life. He was ill-informed. From the Vedic knowledge, we understand that we have many, many lifetimes. One lifetime I may sacrifice for my country. Next life I may sacrifice for my family. Next life I may sacrifice for the whales or the dolphins. I may sacrifice for so many purposes. But the Bhagavad Gita recommends that we sacrifice our energy for reviving our relationship with God, with Krishna, for having loving exchanges, pleasing Krishna. That will be the ultimate perfection of life. Samsiddhi Haritosana. That will be the best. Now I'm connected with something temporary, and I'm sacrificing for that, but I can sacrifice for the eternal and attain eternal perfection. So that's recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. But here, the discussion concerns
people who sacrifice for some lesser goal. Daivameva apare. Apare means others. Those who are the best mystics sacrifice for the Supreme Personality of God. Then there are others. They sacrifice for some other purpose, and they're being described here. So the first is Daiva. There are different demigods who are in charge of different departments of material nature. And according to the Vedic literature, those demigods are available for worship by those who are looking for some material gain. Even in the West, where we don't believe in demigods, still we have some worshippers. A place like Laguna Beach, people go out and they worship the sun first they pray that the sun will be available on their chosen day. And then they expose themselves to the glorious rays of the sun. And they talk about how wonderful the sun is. So practically they're, and they like to have their bodies marked by their dedication to the sun with a nice tan complexion. So they're worshiping the sun. Other people worship not some classic demigod, but some big shot in the material world. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that during the Second World War, there was a gentleman of his acquaintance in India who was worshipping Adolf Hitler, because thanks to the ins and outs of the war, this man was making a profit, maybe on the black market, but somehow or other, he was making a profit due to the war. So this man was practically worshipping Adolf Hitler. Prabhupada illustrated, Jaya Hitler, Jaya Hitler. The man was worshipping Hitler. But we see that people worship political leaders. They have a convention, and there's all banners with the name of the person who they want to glorify, and they all shout out his name, and they sacrifice so much energy to go out and ask people, please vote for this man, he's so great. So they're sacrificing for the glorification of some big human being. And then in the Vedic culture, there are those who sacrifice to still bigger powers, those who are in charge of the sun, those who are in charge of the rain, or in charge of the total material energy. And by worshipping these demigods, such as Lord Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, Kartikeya, Surya, in that way. In that way, they worship various Ishta Devatas, chosen deities. They select some deity, and they worship that deity, generally for getting some material gain in the form of prosperity, or in the form of good health, or in the form of a good mate, or in some other form. They systematically worship these different deities. And so people are under the impression that there are many gods, or that the Hindus believe in many gods. And often they do, because they're not conversant with the science of the Bhagavad Gita. But according to the Bhagavad Gita, Hamadhyari Devana, all of these devatas are lesser powers engaged in the government of this material world under the direction of the Supreme Person, Krishna. So, those who are abhutaya, whose knowledge is, who are bereft of knowledge, Krishna says, ritagyan, worship these demigods. But at least they're sacrificing for some higher purpose. Some sacrifices there. The demigods are also servants of Krishna. So, indirectly, they're worshipping Krishna. Mayaiva vihitam itam. Tebhi maam eva gontiraya jantya vidhi purga. What is that? Those who are shradhayanvita, full of faith in a particular demigod. Tebhi maam eva gontiraya. Yajantya vidhi purvakam. They're actually worshipping Krishna, but indirectly or in the wrong way. But indirectly at least is something. So Daivam, they're worshipping these demigods. Or Brahmahagnava pare yagyam yagyena ivo pajuvati. Others are worshipping in the fire of Brahma. The fire was mentioned here because in the traditional Vedic ceremonies there are ceremonies where there is a fire, a literal fire. So we build a fire and then ghee or clarified butter is offered in the fire and grain is offered in the fire, and it's quite a picturesque ceremony. And the idea is that that fire represents the object of worship. Actually, fire is supposed to represent Krishna. But it's the fire of sacrifice. So, analogously, because it's not that people are offering themselves literally into the fire, but for some people, the idea is that they take the fire to represent the impersonal feature of the Supreme, called Brahma. The aspect of the Supreme, which is everywhere, God is everywhere, God is has no form, no qualities, nothing can be said about him because he's beyond everything. Or it is beyond everything. Usually they don't think in terms of he, they think in terms of it. That absolute, ultimate entity. And often they want to identify themselves with that ultimate truth and merge into that ultimate entity. So that there's no difference between them and the Supreme. So that's referred to here. Brahmagnava pare jagyam. They worship or sacrifice for that. Now, let's see where we are. All the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed within two primary divisions, namely, sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. That's called Dravya Yagya and Jnana Yagya. Some are sacrificing their stuff for their higher purpose. And for some, the sacrifice is the pursuit of knowledge. They sacrifice their time and intelligence in pursuing higher understanding. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of impersonal Brahma. So there's a sacrifice there, just as Nathan Hale sacrificed his life for his country. Some people sacrifice their individuality in order to merge into that higher truth. That's a very great sacrifice. Sacrifice their very selves. But in the Bhagavad Gita, that kind of sacrifice is not recommended. Rather, it's recommended that one keep one's individuality, but engage one's individual energy for the service of Krishna, or the Supreme Individual. Rishikena, Rishikesha Seva. That's called bhakti, or devotional service. The demigods are powerful living entities appointed by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance and supervision of all material functions, like the heating, watering, and lighting of the universe. Those who are interested in material benefits worship the demigods by various sacrifices, according to the Vedic rituals. They are called Bhavishwaravadi, or believers in many gods. But others, who worship the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth and regard the forms of the demigods as temporary, sacrifice their individual selves in the supreme fire and thus end their individual existences by merging into the existence of the Supreme. Such impersonalists sacrifice their time in philosophical speculation to understand the transcendental nature of the Supreme. In other words, the fruitive workers sacrifice their material possessions for material enjoyment, whereas the impersonalist sacrifices his material designations with a view to merging into the existence of the Supreme. The dravya-yagya, or sacrifice of material possessions, is considered lower, and the sacrifice for the sake of knowledge or the sake of reaching the Supreme is considered higher. The people sacrifice to the various demigods, or even in material, but you can understand the principle that people sacrifice for material enjoyment. Just like a man works hard and he gets money and then he spends it on the weekend for his girlfriend. He buys her a gift, and takes her to a movie or to some event, and he's emptying his pockets out. He worked so hard to make that money and now he's sacrificing. But his idea is that by sacrificing this money, I'll get some happiness. My girlfriend will smile at me, she'll be so delighted, and we'll have an enjoyable time. If it's for his family, my wife and family will be so happy, and that will make me happy. So they're sacrificing for some material enjoyment. It's a sacrifice, but for material enjoyment. The worshippers of the demigods are following more or less the same idea, but they elevate it to a higher place. Just like sometimes a man sacrifices a lot of money to influence someone in a political post, with the idea that I'm spending this much, but I'll get back so much more. He bribes an official, or he, in one way or another, invests in the higher powers, with the idea that these people can help me out. I'll do something for them and they'll return the favor many times over. That's the hope. Or you go higher than that And there are the demigods who are in charge of, who are still more powerful. They're not just controlling the transportation department or the bureau of this or the department of that. They're controlling the sun, or they're controlling the clouds. They're controlling health. They're controlling something bigger. So then people worship them to get something. But that's all temporary. And therefore, those who are sacrificing for reaching the Supreme are considered more advanced. They sacrifice their time in philosophical pursuit, or they make other sacrifices for the sake of living a life by which they can become more pure, more advanced in realization. But they're also regarded as blundering, because they're, or as less advanced, because their concept of the Supreme is impersonal. And finally, they're needlessly sacrificing their individual identity. They think, I'm a drop. Make me the ocean. As the drop merges with the sea, let my identity merge with that Supreme identity. That's their hope. Quite a great aspiration. They want to become one with the Supreme. But they don't realize that that's also temporary. The drop joins the sea and merges with the sea. And then the sun comes and evaporates the drop and carries it to the clouds, where it's deposited on the land again, and only gradually has the chance to come back to the sea. But if instead of becoming a drop, he'd become a fish, he could stay in the sea. The fish doesn't become identical to the sea. The fish plays in the sea, and it doesn't get evaporated. It doesn't come and go. It's permanently situated, and it keeps its individual identity. It enjoys being surrounded by the sea, playing in the waters of the sea. The impersonalist strives to sacrifice his identity, but the bhakti yogi keeps his identity and dedicates himself for the service of Krishna. And therefore he's like the fish in the ocean, and he can stay. For the impersonalist, the fire altar of sacrifice is the Supreme Brahma, that impersonal absolute, and the offering is the self being consumed by the fire of Brahma. The Krishna conscious person, like Arjuna, however, sacrifices everything for the satisfaction of Krishna. And thus all his material possessions, as well as his own self, everything is sacrificed for Krishna. Thus, he is the first-class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence. So maybe we'll stop there, since that's the end of the purport, and see what kind of questions you might have about this.
Prabhupada says here in the purport, the demigods are powerful in the entity.
Here, let me start one second after the other door is closed. Okay.
He says the demigods are powerful living entities.
The demigods are powerful living entities.
Appointed by the Supreme Lord for maintenance and supervision of all material functions, like heating, watering, and lighting. So it reminds me of one particular sannyasi that describes some kind of utilities. Like you got to pay your utilities. If you don't, in the material world, if you don't pay your lighting, your heating, your water, well, you get shut off.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that, that if we don't offer something to the demigods, isn't it that they'll shut off our utility?
Yeah, there's some debt there. All of these higher powers are providing our necessities. And if they're not so pleased with us, then we may not be so well provided. And therefore, in the Vedic culture, they worship this deity and that deity. But the Krishna-conscious person accomplishes all of these purposes at once, because Krishna is the origin of all the demigods. He is the master of all the demigods. So just by serving Krishna, we serve all the demigods. As by watering the root of a tree, one waters all the leaves and branches, or as by putting food in the stomach, one provides food to all the parts of the body. So by serving Krishna, the infallible personality of Godhead, one serves all of these different demigods, and in fact, everyone. So, one-stop shopping. Is there a microphone, by the way? The second one?
I think only that one.
Just the one I have. It's out of service, okay. Then, yeah, loudness is needed. Yeah, there's a lot of confusion on the number of demigods. Once you get to a certain number of demigods, it doesn't really matter anymore. There's more, like the number of leaves on a tree. You know, how many can you water? And it doesn't really matter whether there's like 10,000 leaves on the tree or 15,000 or 25,000. You know, once you get to those numbers, then you start looking for it. Is there one place where I can put the water? Do I have to water these 15,000 or 25, however many thousand leaves? Or is there one place where I can put the water? So fortunately, there's one place where we can give our service to Krishna. Then however many demigods there are, we'll be satisfied. Mm-hmm.
Talking about sacrifice.
Yes.
One sacrifice to get to some point. By sacrificing to be the Supreme Court, does it stop at one point?
Does it
stop at one point?
Well, if we sacrifice for the Supreme, does it stop at some point? For those who want to merge with the Supreme, it does stop. They sacrifice, they merge, and then there's nothing else that you can do because you're merged. Your activities are gone, your thoughts are gone, your desires are gone, your feelings are gone, your everything is gone, because now you've merged, and merged means, you know, no individual existence. So then there's no more sacrifice. And that's their idea, that I'll merge and then perfection. But the bhakti yogis think that I want to sacrifice forever for Krishna. I want to give my service, my love, not once and or twice, but always. And Krishna also wants to reciprocate forever. As the devotee wants to sacrifice for Krishna or serve Krishna, Krishna also sacrifices or tries to please his devotees. So it's an eternal relationship. It's not like, you know, you do everything for the girl till you marry and then it's over, you know, never do anything for her again. But that's the beginning of the relationship. Then the relationship increases by she gives up something for you, you give up something for her, you do something, she does something. So that's love, loving dealings. So in the bhakti yoga system, there's loving dealings with God. in the impersonal approach, there's merging with God. And then there's no love, because love means there has to be two. There's you and the object of your love. But their idea is to merge, and then there's no more difference, and but there's no more love. So in the Bhakti Yoga system, there's eternal sacrifice or eternal loving exchanges with God. Is that okay? Yes.
What is the place in this hierarchy? For,
What
is the place in this hierarchy for idealized souls and spiritual masters?
What's the hierarchy for?
Realized.
What is
the hierarchy for realized souls and spiritual masters? Well, from one point of view, there's no hierarchy because everyone is engaged in the service of Krishna. All the devotees are equal. From another point of view, there's a hierarchy. Sometimes it's described as first class, second class, and third class devotees. The third class devotees basically just see themselves and God. They're better than the materialist because the materialist just sees himself. But these devotees, they're neophyte or third class devotees, they see there's myself and there's God. So they want to begin to render service to God. But they don't really take others into account. It's just me and him. Then, on the more advanced stage, the devotee realizes, wait a second, there are others around me. Some of them are also serving God. Others are innocent. They don't really know very much one way or the other about God, God consciousness. Others are opposed to God. Others are very advanced. So he distinguishes those who are devotees, he makes friends with. Those who are against God, he avoids. And those who are innocent, he tries to help enlighten, to give them knowledge. So he's called the second-class devotee, or intermediate devotee, who sees not only himself and God, but others who are related to God one way or another. Then there's the first-class devotee. He sees that everyone's engaged in the service of God. That's a very high stage of realization. He sees that every living being, even those who are against God, they're somehow serving God. Every living being is in some way serving God. That's a very high level of realization. Those who are on that level, they don't even try to spread God consciousness because from their angle of vision, everyone's already connected. So that's a very exalted stage. But I'd truly probably recommend that we should at least try to come to the second stage, the intermediate stage. Is that all right? Yes.
When I heard the previous gentleman ask his question, is there a point at which sacrifice stops? Mm. I had the thought that in the Hare Krishna movement, we use the term sacrifice in a lexical, unusual, specific way. Mm. Whereas for most people who speak English commonly, sacrifice carries with the connotation and denotation of pain and suffering and giving things up and difficulty and hardship. And so I was wondering if perhaps you might want to address that.
Sacrifice may be hardship or sacrifice can mean pleasure. I have some favorite possession and I give it to my someone I love. So that's not painful, that's enjoyable actually. One feels happiness. So why do people dedicate their lives to serving some charity? You know, just like sometimes, often older people, they'll they'll give their time to serving in a hospital, voluntary work. Serving in a hospital or serving some charity. Now, why are they doing that? Are they gluttons for punishment? Actually, they're enjoying. They think, I could be sitting at home watching television, or I could be doing this or that, but by putting in my couple of hours at the hospital, or by putting in a little time at Goodwill, or wherever, whatever the thing is, they feel that they're getting a higher enjoyment. Isn't that so? They feel I'm getting more satisfaction, otherwise they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. So it is sacrifice. People think, as you said, sacrifice means suffering. Actually, sacrifice means enjoyment. Without sacrifice, what is that? The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, ayagyasya kutam ya kuru sattama. Without sacrifice, there's no happiness in this world, there's no happiness in the next world. A person who sacrificed, what do people think of it? He's stingy, he's a miser, he's a creep. You know, he won't give you an inch. Even in this life, he's reviled. You found the verse?
No.
Something a yagyasya kutam yakurusatta.
Here it is, Marsh.
Nayam lokostya yagyasya
kutost anya kurusatta.
Person who doesn't sacrifice. That's a secret to happiness even in the material world. If you want to be, so who was saying that about marriage? You know, if you want to be happy, what was that we were hearing today?
You have to be prepared to lose.
Yeah, you have to be ready to lose. That is to say, there's an argument between husband and wife, and by voluntarily losing the argument, you keep some happiness in the family. If we won't sacrifice, if we're stubborn, obstinate, stingy, self-centered, and even in this life, we won't be happy. The miser sits there looking at his pile of money. What happiness does he get from it? Nowadays we sit and we look at the little dots on our computer screen that indicate that your fortune is increasing. What does it get you? Am I happier because the dots are configured, you know, in what's perceived to be a wealthier way? Yeah, it's the same thing, you know, 60,000 demigods or 80,000 demigods. So there are people who are so rich, it doesn't matter how much money they have. Do they have 5 billion or do they have 7 billion? What does it matter? Are they going to eat twice as much because they've got twice as many billion dollars? Are they going to be twice as happy? If their only goal is to watch their money grow, they're not going to be more happy. They become more happy when they sacrifice. They give for some good cause, they give for something that they feel, yes, this gives me satisfaction. Sacrifice. But that sacrifice is, thank you, we're sacrificing the little company here. That sacrifice gives a temporary benefit.
The reward. You get the reward.
You get the reward. Exactly.
One cannot get rewarded without sacrifice.
Excuse me?
One cannot get rewarded without sacrifice.
Exactly.
In all aspects.
Exactly. Without sacrifice, there's no reward, there's no happiness in this life, and there's no happiness in the next life. But when we sacrifice for Krishna, in this life we become happy, and that happiness is eternal, because we're sacrificing for the eternal. Okay, we're competitive here, there's no point in standing in the doorway. Thank you very much. in or out, and out is the better. So I'm going to sacrifice one way or the other. Practically, I'm forced to sacrifice. The miser, you know, the IRS finds him sooner or later, and he's forced to sacrifice. He won't give voluntarily. So the government comes and plunders his savings. Or in some other way, the thieves come. The thieves come and plunder his money. Or death comes and takes it all. So he's going to have to sacrifice whether he likes it or not, but when he voluntarily sacrifices, he feels some satisfaction. And if he were to sacrifice for the highest cause, he would get the highest satisfaction. So that's Krishna consciousness, to sacrifice our possessions or to sacrifice our time or sacrifice our intelligence, not in the sense of giving it up, but in the sense of dedicating it, using it for the highest purpose for the service of Krishna. That okay?
I have a follow-up question, Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
I think you structured an excellent argument that by sacrificing you become happy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I feel edified by that. But I hear so much in our tradition that you should worship God without desiring anything in return. And so although I accept your argument, I'm having a difficult time reconciling that with the strong thrust in our tradition of selfless service. And I was hoping you could help me.
Yeah, what do they say? What is it that it's its own reward? What the common saying?
Service is its own reward.
Is it service?
I'm guessing on
that. No, it's not service. That's we would say that.
Goodness?
Is it goodness is its own reward? Maybe charity is its own reward. I think that's what it is. Anyway, something or other, some good thing, is its own reward.
Selfless service?
No, that's Krishna consciousness. I don't think ordinarily. I think they say charity is its own reward, something like that. Google it later and find out what it is. But the idea is that, yeah, someone's giving with the idea
virtue
that
virtue is its own reward.
Virtue is its own reward? Okay. And I think charity is also its own reward. So someone's giving with the idea that I'll get something back. You know, I'll give $50 to charity, but the publicity that, you know, my company will give to charity, and then we'll put on our stickers. We give this much to charity. So our sales will increase, right? So it's motivated. So that's all right, at least he's giving. But better is when he thinks, I just want to help this charity. I don't expect anything back. Don't put my name on the plaque, anonymous donation. I just want to help the cause. That's better. So in the service of Krishna also, there are different levels. One level is, let me serve Krishna because Krishna is God and I need some help, and who can help me more than him? I want to get something. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom and he approached Krishna for a kingdom. So someone has desires to be fulfilled, he can approach Krishna. And all right, it's motivated, but at least he's going to the right place. Why should I go to some demigod or some material power when I can go to the Supreme for the satisfaction of my desires? But higher than that is, I don't have any desire, I just want to serve. Just like the gopis, they're the greatest devotees of Krishna, and they're not thinking that we want to get something. We just want Krishna to be happy. So Krishna says, I can't even repay your service. Your service itself, you'll just have to be satisfied with the service itself. And I can't reciprocate, I can't give you anything greater. Something else?
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what it was like being a Prabhupada student and some of the challenges you overcame?
Can I tell you about being Prabhupada's student, some of the challenges that I overcame?
About the healing.
About what?
ISKCON organization.
ISKCON organization.
Some of the
struggles. You have the challenges to stay at the ISKCON organization in spite of everything.
Marsh?
Any organization is a challenge.
Marsh?
Yes.
He was asking the challenges Prabhupada overcame to spread the Hare Krishna. They wanted to speak on that.
Oh, well, that is a big topic. And time is small. So that's like a whole other evening. We'll have to do that some other time. That's okay. Good topic, but vast. Yes?
So, this person mentions impersonal liberation, margin, into the existence of the Supreme. I take it this is referring as Sahaja Mukti?
Yes.
So, as you know, Bhagavatam, there are different kinds of Mukti that you mentioned. Pure devotee does not want any of them, but especially he avoids this kind of merging. But is this still, my question is this still considered a permanent type of liberation, impersonal liberation from which one does
depends, not? Is this liberation considered a permanent type of liberation? Depends who's doing the considering. Those who are pursuing it consider it permanent. They think that I'll eternally merge with the ultimate, and for all eternity there'll be no difference between myself and the Supreme. My identity will merge into the Supreme identity forever. That's how they're thinking. So they certainly consider it permanent. But the devotees notice a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Ye ye ravindaksha vimuktamanima tvayastabhava amishuta bhute aruyakrishchena parampadam tata patanchito nadrita yushmanagre. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, it said that those who are of that mentality, of who have that desire to merge eternally into the Supreme, are thinking themselves liberated. Vimuktamani means thinking oneself liberated. But avishuddha buddhi, their intelligence is not quite pure. They're thinking, we've reached the stage of pure consciousness. But the Bhagavad Gita says, not quite pure consciousness. Avishuddha buddhi. Why? Anadrita Yushmanagriya, they've neglected the personal feature of the Supreme. And therefore, they can't stay in that position. Because the constitutional position, the natural position of every living being, is to be a person. We are personal by, not only by our embodied nature, but by our spiritual nature as individual and personal. And those who want to merge want to sacrifice or discard or suppress that individuality to achieve their objective. And so, in the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they hold their individuality in abeyance. They hold it in abeyance because they want to merge. But it's not really their eternal nature. Their eternal nature is personal, and their eternal natural function is to be in relationship with Krishna, not to be Krishna.
But another Gauri Vaishnava.
And therefore they fall.
Now, I'm familiar with that verse, and the reason I asked them, because another Gauri Vaishnava has commented on that verse. He said this verse in Bhagavatam actually refers to those who think for liberation, not to the one.
Yeah, those who think themselves liberated. Those who are of the impersonalist school think themselves liberated. But
this Gauri Vaishnava goes on to comment that there is actually a permanent state of the impersonal liberation.
Okay, he can say what he likes. It is permanent. Everything, if you merge with Brahma, Brahma is the eternal. So you've achieved eternal liberation. He's right. It's eternal.
He does not fall to the material world.
No, still he falls. Because Abhishuddha Buddhi. Why? Patanchyato anadruta yushmanagraya. Anyone who's merged in that way is in that category. Anadruta yushmanagraya, that he's neglected the lotus feet of Krishna. Not just those who are thinking themselves liberated, those who are actually liberated, who achieve that, what is their position? Anadruta yushmanagraya. They neglect or discard or have no interest in the lotus feet of Krishna, the personality of Godhead.
That's the way I would see it, but
that's what it says. Well, you know, whoever said something else can explain what he means, but we know what we've heard from Srila Prabhupada, and it's a straightforward reading of the verse, and we'll stick with that. And other people can say what they like. Yes?
One can't ever get to the destination, but the journey is what it's all about.
Excuse me?
One can't ever get to the destination, or the whole thing is a journey.
Can one get to the destination, or the whole thing is a journey?
No, Maharaj, what he's saying is he's saying, did you say or you're
no, I understood what he said. Did I get it right? Yeah, I got it right. Is it all a journey, or is there, can one actually reach the destination? One can actually reach the destination. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yakatva nanivartante tatama paramama. Then you stay. Just like you suppose your destination is Hawaii. So you can, you know, save up and read guidebooks and do all these things on your journey to Hawaii from New York City, and you can make it as far as Chicago, and then you can go on to Portland, and then you can gradually make it to LAX. But finally, the goal is, let me be in Hawaii. Now then what happens? If you're, of course, usually you use up your money and you have to go back to New York. But ideally, now you're in Hawaii, so you eat papayas and mangoes, you enjoy the pleasant breezes and sunshine and scenery and whatever's there in Hawaii, that's now your home. You want to stay. You don't want to actually go to Hawaii, take a look and see some girls in grass skirts and then stay in a hotel for 3 nights and go back to New York. Your idea is, let me stay in Hawaii because it's so nice. That's the destination. The goal is not just to always keep traveling on the way. The goal is to get there. You buy a bus ticket. Your goal is not just to be on the bus. Your goal is to reach where the bus is going. So Krishna says there's a journey and there's a goal also. And when you reach that goal, you attain the perfection of your individual existence. As individual living beings, we want to love, we want to be loved, we want to have all sorts of pleasing exchanges, pleasing dealings. And in the material world, we have those things, but it lasts for some time. With my family members, but they die, or they split up, or they disagree with one another, or something happens, and anything in the material world, the love comes and goes. It doesn't, finally I die, and then that's the end of that. But in the spiritual world, one can take part in those loving dealings forever. And the enjoyable nature of those loving dealings is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, which comes after the Bhagavad Gita. You'll like it. All right, shall we stop here? Thank you all very much.